flight controllers. Listen up. You need a go, no go for launch. Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Grab your bourbon. Guidance. This is High Drag.
I am Kyle Yanowski.
I am Miranda McNally.
I am Ash Tarathi.
I'm Fincher.
Zaywan Badeas.
I am Selling.
We are Go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're Go Fly.
Launch Control, this is Houston. We are Go for launch.
This is High Drag.
Greetings, fellow Empyreans. I am Ash Tarathi, and this is High Drag Podcast.
Along with Eve Universe.
Yep, this is High Drag Podcast, although there was a bit of confusion. We didn't know whether or not we were going to record one or the other tonight, so we decided to do both. We slammed them both together, but I guess we'll just jump straight into introductions. And since Random, you have decloaked first, who are you?
I am Miranda McNally. I fly with Stay Frosty and ABA, and I also do a little industrial work on the side.
Opus Magnum.
Hello, I fly with Sub-Zero Corporation in Psy Goonswarm Federation Alliance. I am also the CEO of Eve Onion News, Eve Online's satire news organization.
Min.
Hey there, I'm Dehan Minhyuk, also with Sub-Zero Corporation in Goonswarm.
Makoto Priano.
Hey there. So I'm one of the coordinators with the Arataka Research Consortium. We do tinfoil and lore stuff and like shooting precursors in the face, previously drifters and now drifters and Triglavians.
And finally, Arcia Elkin.
I am a fleet commander and captain in Praetorium Prealis Executoratus. We do Amar things.
You do indeed. And I am, of course, Ash Tarathi, podcaster, streamer, writer, extraordinaire, the voice of New Eden, happily bringing you yet another podcast. This time is High Drag. Let's get right into it, guys. Actually, has anybody been interested or doing anything interesting this week? I mean, I know that there's not much to do right now, but
random, been so boring.
Random, have you been able to do anything?
I actually, as a matter of fact, I have. Right after the last episode that we put out, we had talked briefly about the Stream Fleet Invitational Tournament. Suffice it to say that our day two did not go as planned. We did end up fourth place out of eight teams. So we finished squarely in the middle. Not as good as we wanted to, but what the heck, we had fun. However, we are now in the process of working on an internal tournament, and my first round for the internal tournament starts on Saturday, this coming Saturday. So I have been theory crafting solo, putting together ships, frigates and desis in the hopes of surviving round one on Saturday. That's literally between that and real life. That's all I've had time to do.
You know, I'm always surprised by how well the Eve community will swoop in and fill a void that's left behind by CCP, right? It's like, oh, we're not going to have Alliance tournaments this year. Okay, well, then we're going to do like seven other player tournaments then. Screw you, you know? Like, the Eve player base is very, very good at taking care of business ourselves in the event that high command isn't going to do it for us.
There's a certain amount of creative theory crafting that goes with tournaments that absolutely has to be expressed during the course of the year. So when you take away our Alliance tournament, we have to figure out a way to express ourselves in other ways. So it just so happens that the Eve community is more than willing to start throwing together some player tournaments. And more often than not, we are more than willing to participate.
And at risk of derailing this entire conversation at the introduction of the first person, I wanted to point out that I actually am really happy with like the shift in consciousness when it comes to tournaments. I can remember like 2-3 years ago, we actually had the conversation and I had to justify, I had to explain why it was okay to have tournaments and why it was, you know, tournament players were just as good as normal players. Like that was not a believed thing. And so we've definitely come a long ways as a community.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, moving on. Opus, what have you been up to?
I have been burning down northern structures for the past 2 weeks. We're currently in the midst of the Eat My SBOT war. I'm not sure what you want to call it, but NC.'s been a little absent, and so we've just been burning structure after structure after structure. In fact, I'm on a fleet right now, burning more structures. Occasionally come out, we have some good fights, but it's been pretty mundane bat war right now. But it's fun, though. You get to burn the elite PvP or stuff to the ground.
As long as you guys keep killing VNIs, I'll be happy.
Actually, I haven't killed any VNIs because they're all docked up.
Well, then you failed completely. Min, what have you been up to?
Just 5 minutes before we started recording, I finished my 3-day 14 mid Thino chain from Delve to the deployment zone with my new Titan. So I'm going to take a few days to declunch, and I'll get back to you on actually doing stuff in Eve.
I am not sad that I'm not in NullSec. Makoto, you've been just like idling, right?
Yeah, totally nothing to do. So anyway, the culmination of basically like weeks and months of tinfoil is finally upon us. And by culmination, I mean, say, like the first wave of the opening rounds of the invasions. And I say invasions plural because the thing that just hit Tuesday is evidently like the beginning of chapter one. And person tweets, I'm sure you've seen that tweet by CCP Falcon, you know, and saying that, oh, things are going to be ramping up over the following weeks. So I don't think this is going to be like how Sansha incursions play out currently, where it's like, oh, hey, you know, it sets up, you've got like however many days, you kill the thing, you move on to the next. These are probably going to be evolving for weeks, not least of which because CCP appears to be doing some live testing.
If not ongoing. I mean, so especially if you listen to the stuff from Eve Down Under, like this is the new philosophy of CCP. Like there's this ongoing story and it leads to things. And more importantly, they're putting a lot of effort into keeping things secret. They want the mystery back again. And I honestly really appreciate it for a couple of reasons. One, it's fun. Like the discovery of everything is pretty fun. But at the same time, like this may be the thing that people needed to really trigger into the lore, right? Because before this, it wasn't very useful. But now, like, it's like, oh, well, who are these Triglavian guys? And it's like, oh, well, you know, that leads into the next thing and the next thing. It's kind of like with the Drifters, but like even more so than it was back then, I think.
Certainly. Well, considering that the Drifters were in a way an AI testbed, and at this point, the AI is actually really quite mature. They are building on it in the systems that they originally created with the Drifters. Like the Triglavian incursions use the tail system that was originally built for Drifter incursions and then has been used and sort of evolved for Sodio, for FOBs, and so on and so forth. So there have been mechanics that have been getting worked on progressively over time, and then they've been tied together with, you know, dynamic fleet and site creation and so on and so forth. So, you know, this ideally is going to be a form of content that they can just continue iterating on. And that's, of course, not just saying, you know, oh, hey, Triglavian incursions. You know, it might be that we get new counter invasions from the Sansha or Drifters, or, you know, the
Kaldari could attack the Galente, the Mara could invade the Mimitar again, the Elder Fleet could come back. They could do whatever they want with this thing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, for instance, and this totally tinfoiling, not saying this should or will happen, but, like, imagine a faction warfare revamp where the NPC navies are actually competent and burn hostile structures. And neutral structures are locked to, like, the system docking list that would apply if they were of the system currently, or of the faction currently occupying the system.
But like, if we don't have to be competent, why do the NPC navies...
So before moving on, though, I have a quick question. You, more than almost anybody else, certainly more than anybody in this conversation, really was paying attention to this lore as it was rolling out, right? From the discovery of the world arcs, construction yard, to the Semiosis console links, all the way up through the reveal of the world arc and the invasion itself. Do you feel that what we have gotten, or what we seem to be getting, how do you feel about what we've gotten based on what has led up to it? Do you think that the delivery has lived up to the hype?
Yes. So short answer, yes. Long answer is going to be a lot more complicated, and I could probably carry on for like 5 hours. So I'll try to keep it relatively short, even if it's a long answer. In the first place, the roaming fleets are awesome. The enemies are threatening without being just like massively OP one-shot everything. The potential for catastrophic change, I think CCP has not shown all its cards, but considering what they've said, it sounds like what they're aiming to do is possibly to significantly change the geography of EVE Online. And how exactly that's going to play out and what exactly that means, I don't think any of us can really guess except in sort of like fever dream sorts of ways.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some basic policies that have prevented certain things from happening in EVE, and it looks like those policies are being revisited. And with that being true, you're right, the sky's the limits, but at the same time, it's like you're totally bumbling in the dark because you don't know which sky they're going to end up in. Either way, we're going to talk more about this later. Let's go ahead and move on to Arcia. What have you been up to this week in spite of all these invasions?
So in addition to my usual public fleets, and I did shoot triangles last night. I shot some triangles last night with some allies of ours. We've been trying to make a market in Derelict, which has been kind of fun because I'm not used to doing anything that doesn't involve shooting other players. But like, I'm trying to think like on an industrial level for this market. We're trying to like the Kimihara Alliance. Lumen is trying to revigorate the mandate. So that's kind of fun. And just it's been a lot of RP since the Zashev thing. With the slaver that we won the bidding on.
Isn't that what we're going to talk about in just a couple seconds?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the thing? Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm probably here for.
All right, good. All right, well, then we will get back to that in just a second. Very quickly, I have been streaming and hanging out with the streamers and having just a blast. The people who've come to hang out in my streams have been great. I got new emojis, right? Like this is, I didn't even know this was a thing. Like this is a reason enough to become, an associate or not a partner, but the tier before that. But you get these emojis, right? And you can customize them to be whatever you want. And then those emojis get to be used anywhere. So I got the three Triglavian clades at logos, which I thought was really cool. So people are able to put, like show off their favorite clade. I love it. I love the fact that you can, like, I feel like I'm adding something to Twitch. Either way, I digress.
The emoji is pretty cool. I like my little capacitor is empty one. I got to make that. I have the extra slots now, so I got to make that for everybody because that's too useful.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of love for streamers in the last, like, week or so. I've gotten a lot of subs and a lot of just really good support and meeting a lot of really great streamers. I hadn't realized that I wasn't really watching very many streams recently. And so like I came back and started paying attention to all the people that are there. And there's a lot of really cool, really, really cool people out there doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And a lot of newbies who, honestly, it's very obvious that to me that these various features that they've been coming out with are incredibly successful because these new players are going into the abyss. They're dying. They're loving it. They're doing they're using the agency. They're checking out invasions. These are new players that like within 2 days are saying, I'm addicted to this game. That's incredible. And I hope that it's a sign of something in the future. But before we get to all that, before the future, before even invasions and the Triglavians and all that stuff, a little bit ago, there was a big lore spike. A little bit of a lore spike, at least. And since basically very few people actually cover the lore and a lot of people look to us or me or whatever to do so, I decided to invite Arcia back on to talk a little bit about what's been going on and catch us up. Last time we talked about the conflict that started around Halloween.
From Kaaha to Thebeka.
Right. And so that led through with the Mimitar and Amar standoff and the structure being reinforced and the Amar using the apostle and whatnot. So what's happened since
NPC
then?
NPC apostle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the NPC apostle. What's happened since then?
Well, after Thebeka wound down, it was kind of quiet for a bit. And then there was an attack in Iridia. on a planet. It destroyed all like life on the planet. It was another Blutter attack in the same vein. It was on the it was on another player's backstory planet, Matara Nuel. Then Conid tried to make a claim for the territory from the Empire because the Conid Navy came in behind the attack and supposedly repelled it. But it, like, all the evidence kind of says that Conid is behind all of this, because everybody who attacks Conid, like, verbally gets something in their backstory, gets attacked. Like, after Matara, Arcia is attacked, right? And her family's house was burnt down. But there was a news story.
Hold on. I need to slow you down a little bit. So just to make sure I understand, this is not the attack that happened in October. The Blood Raiders use Deathglow on a canid place. That this is not the same one.
Yeah, no. Because back in October, the first one was Kaha. That was a canid planet, right. And that was the Deathglow attack then. And then there were attacks in Thabeka, Al-Kazbi, and a few other planets after that. And then the next one was on a planet in Iridia, which is the constellation with Mishi and all that, region with Mishi and all that. Next, close to Delve, right? But it's like high low sec, the high sec islands over there. And then there was another a suicide attack in from the World News, is a suicide attack in Dam Tar Saad, the capital, which was on Arcia's family. And there was also some lore from, there was an illegal slaver in Thabeka who was caught by the Ministry of Internal Order. And later on, there was another news saying they escaped the Ministry of Internal Order. And then a little while after that, an NPC posted on the forums saying that they captured this illegal slaver and they were auctioning him off. And it was like a hidden bid auction, and a whole bunch of different player factions bid to capture this NPC. They want to turn him into the governments of their choice or whatever of their choice. And what ended up happening was the Amar loyalists raised 200 billion ESC and won the bid.
Okay, and so, when did the second attack happen then? Because I remember when we last talked about this, we thought that the Amar plot was wrapping up, and we were thinking that it was going to switch over to Galente Caldari, but clearly that's not the case.
Well, the thing with when it got to the point where the slaver was for auction, anybody could have won it. And it just happened to be the Amar, which kind of keeps it in the ball in our court, kind of.
That's fair. Although, but, I guess, how did people know about it to get involved?
It was posted on the official forums in the IGS, the auction you're talking about.
Okay, so the IGS is still a really good tool for those. Because people ask me all the time, how do I get involved and all that kind of stuff? And we recommend things like paying attention to the discourse, possibly watching the world news feed and stuff like that. So we also have to pay attention to the in-game or the in-character forums too.
Yeah, every so often, like, the NPCs will post on the in-character forum. And this was a post on the official forums in the in-character forum by an NPC Thucker who captured the guy who escaped, and anybody could have bid on it, right? So
do we have any reason to believe that this is associated with Sine Wave Omega? Because the Thucker tribe were a main character in that, and they were talking about, like, with the Sisters of Eve and the clones and all that kind of stuff. The return of the Thucker. Do you think this is at all associated, or is it just like the Thuckers are the smugglers and therefore?
Well, there is a connection to an old thing, because one second, the character was Cesley.
She was a Sekal headhunter, right?
Exactly. Cesley Ashok was a Sekal headhunter, and they played a part on wasn't it the attack on the planet in Galente space?
Probably that, and also, I mean, they aren't they a Dust 514 NPC corp?
Who?
Remember the PlayStation 3 shooter game that CCP had? Yeah. Right. So yeah, they were like a mercenary corp from that. And okay. So she's basically from that group, and they're the ones who captured him.
And well, that's really interesting, because it looks like CCP, I've been noticing that it looks like CCP is reinvigorating the Project Nova lore, but I guess we can get into that in a little bit. Go on.
But ultimately, what ended up happening, if we met with them the first time in secret. So basically, we RP'd with the devs multi-boxing a few characters. And then the news broke that because another NPC noticed that we were there, so the news broke exposing that we had met with the Thuckers. And then so when we were trying to seal the deal a couple days later, the Ministry of Internal Order and the Tetramon, the Saint Tetramon guy, came and they both demanded we turn over the prisoner to them, but not the other one. So like it was like a standoff there, and we basically told them no, that we were gonna bring the prisoner to Eric Serum, which is the current heir of the Serum family.
So this would be the Serum or Sorum, however you want to pronounce it, you're probably closer than I am, is the same family that Jameel, the former empress, was part of.
Yeah, Jam Jams was from Serum, and I was on the Serum team.
And it's worth noting that the Serum are the most. Is it safe to say that they're still the most militant of the houses?
Yes, but it's also important because a lot of the evidence leads us to believe that the Conid are behind the attacks because of basically all the characters who got hit were Amar, who were standing against Alara Chalkhade, who was the Conid NPC who posts on the forums a lot. So, and Sarum and Conid have been fighting forever, like before like the Kingdom Rebellion. That goes back for all of like known history. Those two houses have fought forever. So it's basically positioned to be like a civil war that is like, it seems like it's brewing kind of, because on one side you have Tashmer Khan, which is kind of buddy buddy with Conid, but then like Sarum and Otter Shapur and Khorizor especially hate Conid. So it's like the sides are kind of forming, and Kador is probably on the side with Sarum and Otter Shapur and Khorizor, because Kador owned the constellation in Aridia that Conid wanted to claim.
So help me out. What was it? 200 years ago, King Conid lost the tournament, but refused to die.
King Conid lost the tournament, refused to commit Shatholth sin, which is the ritual suicide the heirs have to create when they die. So he basically ran away, took one third of the Imperial Navy with him, and formed his own nation. That was eventually reconciled, and Jamel actually was the one who technically brought him back into the fold. And Garke Conid, which was the King Conid that ran away the first time, supposedly died in the last Amar tournament that we all fought in. But the new Farokoth, I'm pronouncing it wrong, but Farokth Conid, is just believed to be a clone of the last one, basically. So he's basically still cheating the system in a lot of players' minds.
Right. And that was against the rules, although they changed the rules.
No,
right?
It's still against the rules. Like, they don't admit to him being a clone, but like...
I thought they got rid of the Rite of Sacred Flesh right when...
No. What they did was, for Capsuleers, there's like a theology council admission that the Capsuleers their souls still go on to heaven, but it doesn't get rid of sacred flesh for the royal heirs.
I see. Well, I'm not going to heaven. I'm not leaving here. So, okay. But so Conid its own kingdom now? Have they integrated back into Amar, but yet now they're warring? Like, what is the actual political situation of Conid kingdom?
The political situation of Conid is kind of a situation where he gets to have his cake and eat it too, that they're kind of like autonomous, but he still represents a royal house, basically.
All right. So it sounds to me like they're about to fight it out to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. It feels like a civil war, and maybe with those new mechanics that we talked about, they could actually do something like that.
All right.
That's wishful thinking, right?
So when was the last point in this story? When help me figure out the timeline of this, right? So we last talked in January, and then all this stuff happened since then. So what was the last, where are we at?
All right. So the meeting where we actually received the token that represents the slaver was like a few weeks ago. It was pretty recent, a couple of weeks ago. And maybe like a week before that, we met the first time. And then there was like a week or two period of the bidding. So most of this was in the last month. And then the attack in Iridia happened in the end of March. So after the Becca, the next attack, so the Becca ended in late January, early February, right? And then the next attack was at the end of March. And then there was another attack in mid to late April, and the most of late April to now, it was the arc with the slaver for sale.
And I just totally forgot what my follow-up question is. Anybody else have anything?
I think at this point, what it sounds like is that we're sort of waiting for the, what's the aphorism term phrase? Like the other boot to fall,
shoe to drop?
Yeah, basically, that's it.
Yeah, I think this will end with Alara Chalkade, which is the Khanid NPC who always crap talks on the forums, that has bombed all of our families and all that, is going to fall. I don't expect King Khanid to fall, but that would be amazing.
So actually, I remember my question now. So you said that the Blood Raiders were doing the attacking, but there's suspicion that the Khanid were the real culprits. Can you explain that a little bit more?
All right, so every one of these attacks corresponds with Chalkade, the Khanid guy coming. Well, first of all, he was the guy who picked the Khanid champions, potential Khanid champions for the Amar tournament. And one of them was a well-known Blooder RPer, right?
There was a deity,
right? And then there was a little kerfuffle about that back then. And it kind of like went away and sat boiling for so long. When he came back, every so often he would talk on the forums and then players would yell at him, and then the next day there'd be a news story with CCP like looking up the players like wiki pages and backstories and like bombing whoever yelled at Chalkade's home. The Blood Raiders attacked, and it happened like four times.
So okay, that's, if what you're suggesting is true, that's pretty amazing that CCP, you know, people often come to me like, oh, or I see in the forums, oh, there's nothing happening in the lore. I wish something would happen. It sounds to me like things are happening and not only happening, but really, really engaging specifically with the people that are taking part in it.
I'm one of the people who was attacked, right? Like, so I have a wiki page for Arcia, and she was born in Damtorsa, the imperial capital. And she lived in a residential arboretum, which is like a botanical garden, basically. And three news stories ago, it was attacked with a firebombing.
Okay, so are we thinking that Khanid's working with the Blood Raiders? Like, that's a pretty serious accusation.
Yeah, yes. Yes, when we were talking,
do they have history together?
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of the Khanid, the Blood Raider ships are full of Khanid design. Like, if you look at the Krur and you look at the Khanid Navy ships, the Krur is there. Like, the Krur is from the Khanid Navy, and the slaver guy, when we were interrogating them, like RPing with the devs, like he said he knew of a high level corruption in the Khanid aristocracy, right? And yeah, like Chalkade nominated the Blooder, and the Blooder attacks all hit people who were critical of Khanid.
But the first Blooder attack was on a Khanid place, and it ended up being this like messy, messy deal. Are you suggesting that Khanid was that a false flag operation?
To some degree, yeah. And some people actually suggest that it was an attempt to get rid of the queen who is on that planet at the time, Queen Zitaraz, because she's a lot less of a jerk than King Khanid is.
Didn't somebody disappear for a little while?
Okay.
Yeah. And then, hold on, real quick, just so I'm clear, and Makoto may have to answer this. Who was it that was who disappeared with the rogue drones and haven't been seen again?
Taya Akira, who is with Pharos of Thera. And that is indeed Sinewave Omega, definitely Triglavian related, but no connection to this story arc. One random thing I would like
to... Yeah, I was just trying to keep things straight. All my disappearing people, you know?
Yeah. Corruption in the Empire is totally a theme that has been seen before. Karsa.
The Red Chancellor.
And so they're... Like, this isn't necessarily played up as much because I think the Canid have taken up the mantle, mostly, you know, you can probably credit Delegate Zero with this, but at various points, there have also been implications that the Sarum propensity to bloodthirstiness might also have occasionally led Sarumites to Sanisabic sympathies.
Yeah, Chalkade actually used that attack against us. Chalkade, the NPC, this is actually what got Arcea bombed. A Sanisabic RPer posted a thread. It was like, she's basically just completely sarcastic all the time, and she was she called out Arcea and Aldrith in this thread because we sarcastically responded to her on the summit or something. And then Chalkade came into the thread and was like, members of the Praetoria interacting with Sanisabic, I knew there was blood in the serum, whatever. So the NPC actually accused us of being blooders. And then that's when Arcea yelled at him and got bombed the next day.
That's fascinating. Is there anything else?
With this arc, I think I've summed up most of it that I can think of.
Well, all right. If anything more happens, please let us know. This is a very interesting part of EVE Online that not only...
There was one more thing that...
Oh, go.
So when the two... When we were receiving the package, the slaver that we auctioned off, and the two groups, the Tetramon and the Ministry of Internal Order, were both demanding that we turn it over to them. Matara Nuel, the Serum champion who was given holdership in the Serum family, was in our fleet, and one of the reasons why they let us actually take it and give them to Lord Serum was because she can act as a intermediary for the Serum family and stand in, like, officially. So having the Serum champion with us let us actually kind of get them off our backs without being declared heretics that day.
And so, outside of the RP stuff, do we know who in CCP, how many people in CCP, and who is involved in making all of this, like, day-to-day lore happen?
Well, a lot of it is CCP Delegate Zero, and then there's a small ISD team involved in it. Like, the ISD team is much bigger, but there's a few involved in lore. But the main puppet master is Delegate Zero.
Mackling is asking if... are there any other, or all the other, are the other races' lore as sophisticated as the Amar lore?
So that's sort of a point of ongoing discussion and contention.
Very much so, yeah.
What I would...
Go ahead, Makoto, you first.
What I would say is that the various lores differ to a significant degree. There's a lot about, like, civil society for the Galente. There's a bit of stuff for the Kaldari. The Kaldari end up involved in, like, a lot of events in recent EVE history, but don't necessarily have the same, like, depth of deep backstory that, for instance, the Galente or the Amar do. The Min Matara...
Well, the Kaldari have one particular plotline that's simmering with Heth.
Yeah. I think the Heth line is more or less dead, but it's sort of what it ends up being is like the lore oriented developers naturally are going to put out storylines that get interaction going. Like, basically, they want to put their limited resources out in such a way that gets maximum effect and echoes as long as possible and gets more spontaneous activity on the part of players. So you end up with sort of a chicken and egg situation where, you know, like at present the Amar roleplay community is the largest and most robust. And so, you know, it makes sense to put some energy there. There have also been various plot lines brewing for the Kaldari, Galente, and Minmatar, but, you know, it's one of those things where it doesn't echo in quite the same way. But that's sort of an ongoing thing that just, you know, it needs to be worked on. That's where we are.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed, especially recently, is that CCP has become more ambitious about doing lore stuff, but they generally seem to target people who are already into the lore stuff. It's like you're opting in to doing it. And I think that's because there's kind of two different people, two different kinds of people in EVE, the people that find the lore fascinating and interesting, and then the people that just would rather PvE and all that stuff stay as far away from their game as possible. And so that's a really tricky situation for CCP. So I really think that the more you get out there and publicly make yourself visible as being a person or an entity that's working, quote unquote, with the lore, the more likely that CCP will use those hooks. Just like any other role-playing game, right? Like if your background story is good and you roleplay good, then the DM will be able to use your story for more cool stuff.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the community, the greater EVE community, might end up to some degree over-accentuating the divide between, you know, those strange role players or those lore people and the people out in NullSec who are just doing Pew. You know, it's like, that's an awfully dichotomous view of things. There are a lot of people who, you know, want to raise a flag of a given type or want to do a thing and have an impact in the world, but just don't really have, like, the connections or know exactly how to do it.
Sure, and let me be clear. I'm not saying that NullSecers don't want lore and other people do. What I'm saying is that there seems to be very, like, you're either hot or cold on it, right? You either find the lore fascinating, you want to know everything about it, you want it to be a thing, and you want, you know, things to happen in the universe all the time, or you think that the video game, you know, this is just a video game about smashing spaceships together, and you would just rather there not be NPCs to begin with.
I think one of the things that makes EVE such a good game is that you can have all the hundred, like the thousands of people who play it, all playing a different game. Like, yeah, maybe not everybody, but like, I think that my experience with EVE is very different than your experience with EVE or even like another RPer's experience with EVE. And it, like, you can kind of make this game into like what you want it to be because it's like so freeform.
I agree. Also, Humanist points out, and I want to stress again, because I always say this, which is that in EVE, you are always role-playing. It doesn't matter if you think you are or you don't like the lore. If you think the lore is stupid and not worth your time, then guess what? You are a capsuleer who is basically broken and doesn't think of baseliners in that kind of way. And that's fine. That's the whole point. A lot of capsuleers are monsters. We've become our lack of humanity has gotten to a lot of people. And so if that's what you're doing, if you're not engaging with the lore at all, guess what? You're just one of those people.
Yeah. Or you have like capsular dementia.
Right.
You've been potted a few too many times.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of which, somebody was mentioning earlier about the captain's quarters. And one of my favorite like pet theories, my favorite of my personal tinfoil theories is that the captain's quarters never really existed in the same way that like in the game, the sound that you hear isn't real, obviously, but they've added sound because they found that cutting out an entire sensory, you know, aspect helps drive the capsuleers to madness. So by like simulating noise, then that helps keep quote unquote capsuleers sane. So they've already done this for other things. So my theory was that the entire captain's quarters was just an experiment to try to convince capsuleers that they're still human. Which is why it didn't make any sense that we were getting out of our pod in the first place. It's why it didn't go anywhere and why it just disappeared.
People do get out of their pods. Like, baselining is a thing, and there's like different legalities of it in the different empires and such.
It's not safe out there.
Hey, to be fair, I know I'd try to get out of my pod once in a while, if nothing else, just for a cheeseburger.
The simulation is nowhere near the real thing, after all.
I know this steak isn't real. All right. Okay, cool. So lots and lots of really good RP stuff going on, not just Triglavian stuff, but other aspects of the lore. Is there anything else that is relevant at this point?
I'm good.
All righty. Well, then, I think that we're going to make a lore sandwich, but like an anti-sandwich. So we're going to actually move on to more crunchy bits for a little bit. It's been an expansion week. It is Invasion expansion. We've got a bunch of new features. Let's start with the new feature that is in everybody's face, not the invasion itself, but the new agency, we've been talking about the new about agency for a very long time. I know I have spoken very highly of the agency redesign and what it might represent for us. We've now had it for a few days in its final form. What do you guys think?
Personally, I think it's a gorgeous overview or a gorgeous UI. I love it. I finally got a chance to actually log in and take a look at it today. And while it's going to take a little bit for me to actually figure out, I look forward to it. Challenge accepted. I think it's gorgeous.
My biggest problem so far is that in the agency, it shows a little square at the bottom of each thing, which tells you what your rank is. And so it's like rubbing in my face the things that I don't have records in since the records are all lost.
Do you want to know what my biggest problem with that is?
Go for it.
So if you look at the description for the locator agent, it references capsuleers as players.
Oh.
Didn't keep with the meta.
That's actually interesting because I remember that was one of the things that people with the...
mission agents, right? Agents and missions.
In the trailer, I know my initial response was actually negative. Other people are like, we figured it out of it, or like I got more used to it. But the idea that the trailer is obviously the game side of things as opposed to the in-universe side of things was a bit jarring to me, I gotta say.
It's under mission agents, locator agents, yeah.
Yep, there it is. Player contracts. Or player, locating other player characters. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't even know. I don't even know if I'm allowed to use it. That means because
This is non-canon now. I guess. How else are you going to find your invasion? One of the weirdest things that I found about the agency. This is just kind of a side thing. Resource Wars is not in it, right? Which is weird. Resource wars are still in the game. You can find the resource sites in the universe and still run them and still get the rewards and all that stuff. But without it being in the agency, you can't find them to go do them. You have to like randomly dunk around. So I like to make the joke that they made resource wars into exploration and exploration into resource wars.
Oh God. Yeah. Resource Wars. It could have been so great, but it really seems like they took exactly the wrong angle on the rewards for it.
Yeah. We're going to not go down that rabbit hole because then I get angry and I want to be happy today. So, we're going to put a pin on that one, but yeah, no, it's not even in the agency at all. But as I kind of alluded to there in the new agency, they have changed their philosophy for how people gain information within the game. And they have leaned much harder towards letting players find the things that they need, right? So in Faction Warfare, you can now see every Faction Warfare plex in the entire war zone. In Anomalies, you can see every single system, how many anomalies are there, and you can see the anomalies that are in your system and in the adjacent systems. In Signatures, you can see every signature that is in known space. They have really pushed for this, you know, here's the content, just go do it. How do you guys feel about this design philosophy? Are you one of the people that got really mad about the changes in signatures? I know I was. But I actually headed over to Signal Cartel and had a good chat with them in their Discord, and they started to change my mind, actually.
I think it's a negative, but that's me.
I'm with her. I'm still not real keen on it. I mean, I don't outright hate it, but I just don't like it. It still takes away most of the challenge of actually exploring.
So the biggest argument that I have heard, or at least that compels me, and I keep going back to it, is the fact that this does not affect wormhole space. So if you think about wormhole space as being like the exploration space, then it kind of makes a little bit more sense.
But also, I was somebody who did a lot of exploration. Like I had exploration ships on the edge of Derelict, and I would always go into Curse and like the Great Wildlands and all that. And that makes it different.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on all of that. Like that's what I'm saying. I was one of the loudest proponents, and I definitely, if I could make the choice, I would say that signatures should still be that way. Although they did say that they might iterate on it. And if anything, honestly, if they just made it so that NullSec sites didn't show up, or more importantly, maybe even if NullSec sites were only visible by the people that had that SOV, then you might have a really good feature. But this idea of all of the null sites being, being visible, I don't think that CCP really appreciates the experience of being an explorer as you like bust into NullSec through some wormhole in null or from, you know, HiSec or wherever, and you're trying to figure out where everybody is and what everybody's going and the craziness and the excitement that that entails. So I really think that it'd be nice to bring back the mystery into NullSec. But overall, one of the things I do agree that HiSec probably needed this, because what happens is that a new player, or even, you know, like just a player, will undock and like maybe make a few jumps, maybe even blindly, and scan down a couple things, not get anything useful. And it's very easy to get discouraged if you don't know what you're doing. So those of us who actually did do it, like, that's fine. But what about all those people that only, it's just like the rest of Eve. Like, what are those about those people that only got like 5% of the way through it and then quit?
I know that a lot of people have trouble getting into Eve, but I remember when I was a little newbie and I started in 2010 with my current character, and I had a couple trial accounts before that, and I failed to get into it during those because it was just too hard. And then I was basically stubborn and I'm like, I'm going to learn it this time. And it took me like 2 weeks to figure out how to jump out of the system that I started in. All right. And one of the first things I wanted to do was explore. And like, I look back on the little stupid me getting lost and looking for stuff and going into random anomalies that I would find knowing nothing about them. I look on that fondly, but I can see how some people don't like that. But that was like, it really spoke to me. And now I know nobody will have that experience.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Honestly, RC, I can't agree with you more. Personally, I can't. I mean, I remember back when I started, and if something was difficult, you just kind of stuck with it. You kind of forced yourself to learn. And, you know, we've heard tons and tons of arguments about the dumbing down of Eve, but, you know, please, there's got to be some challenge.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I definitely agree. Although I would say that one of the things that CCP seems to be doing is trying to get those moments, but find a way to manufacture them and get people to them more consistently. So this idea of like bumbling around being lost, I think that that's actually still possible, in particular for a new player that doesn't understand how a lot of this stuff works. But this feature might get them out the door to get to that point better, if that makes sense. Like you said, you quit and came back. This might make it so that somebody doesn't need to quit and come back first. They can just go and get lost and then, you know, get really confused because they're in a wormhole and then they don't know where they are.
You know, pardon me for putting on some tinfoil on my head here, but if a person isn't willing to put the kind of effort to completely learn this, is this the kind of person that's going to really stick with the game, though? And I don't want to sound like the bad guy here, but let's be realistic. You know, Eve is a game traditionally where you have to put some effort into it. You really have to work to get your enjoyment out of it a lot of times. And if you hand everything out on a silver platter, sooner or later, they're going to find out that Eve, if you don't put that work into it, if you don't, you know, step back and go, okay, if I can't force myself to figure this out, then it's not for me. I'm sorry to get all meta here, but I really still think that making it easier or just for the newer players is a mistake. I really do.
So Humanus brings up a point. He says, it makes sense that we know everything about known space. We know the gateways transport information and exchange information. It would make sense even for NullSec to have like the basic things to be like, these are the things that we're detecting, like, and it's part of the, what is it, the Galnet rat? No, that's just Galente. But what is the name of the overarching system that everybody's plugged into? Not just the fluid router, but like the, either way, whatever.
Neocom?
Is it just the Neocom?
I mean, the Neocom is the interface system. Galnet is the general term for the galactic network, I guess.
Oh, okay. Then Galnet. It kind of makes sense for the Galnet to have this information in for known space and not for unknown space. What do you guys think about that argument?
It's a fair argument. My perspective is, on one hand, I totally get and appreciate the idea of getting people who haven't yet developed mastery to the point where they can have those moments of discovery. But I just wish exploration felt like exploration. You know, for me, it hasn't felt
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
I think I'm in agreement with you. Like, I get all the points. And it's one of those things that I guess I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm willing to sacrifice that for everything else that's happening. But you're right. I still believe it's a net loss. And I think that making this change in HiSec alone would have been really good, because that's what gets people out the door, right? But then once you're out of HiSec, the training wheels should be off, right?
Maybe even low sec, so that people can sort of go, oh, hey, but if I go two or three jumps in, there are a bunch of signatures. Maybe I should chance it.
That's a good point. No, you definitely want to have low sec have it so as to like be like, crunchy, crunchy low sec.
Yeah, but insofar as null sec is concerned, I mean, I think we already know what total information availability means for that.
I do find that really weird that, like, we get this feature at the exact same time as Hilmar is saying things like, local's too safe, we need to make things more dangerous, and then here's even more perfect information.
I wouldn't be surprised if, considering what they did with the chat backend, if they have some devious schemes. But it might be a while until we see it really roll out.
Well, not to go down that, well, I guess we could go down that rabbit hole, but they have spoken about that kind of thing in the past. And the most solid of it was that they were talking about the next phase of structures would be propaganda structures and communication structures. And one of the things that they were talking about is that maybe NullSec would have to have one of these special structures in order to be able to have local, or maybe even just to suppress it. Who knows? So I always thought that it was a really big miss, not how they dealt, or not the rollout of the chat program. Like, obviously that was, I guess, a mistake, but more importantly, how they handled it. Like, they could have easily have just said that it was, you know, the drifters interfering with the router, and then been like, well, you know, guess what? Local's no longer reliable. Good luck. And then it would have been fine. It was the fact that they didn't say anything, and then they admitted it was a mistake that I think was the problem. I think they should have just rolled with it and said it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, blaming NPCs for something that is actually a technical issue with a sort of questionable rollout of a technological change. I mean, I understand
that's
that.
That's what they're there for.
Well, but it can't always be the NPCs. The NPCs have to occasionally be competent.
Yeah, but it would have been perfect, though, because the drifters have already shown capacity to disrupt the routers, right? Multiple times. So it would have been a shoo-in. I digress, though. Okay, so anything else about the agency before we move on to the next thing?
I know that we had talked a little bit about before the recording started that I actually did a little research now on the PI thing, and I'm really going to be excited on using that PI window. I've been waiting to reset my PI when I found out that the PI window in the agency was going to be available. So it's going to take me a little bit to figure it out, but I'm really looking forward to working with that.
It is really well done. I would say that if there's any, the biggest wins out of the new agency is the new PI window and the new faction warfare window.
Other than that, just because I haven't had a chance to literally log into game until today, it's for me, it's going to take a little exploring, but everything that I have seen from the new agency window, it's colorful. It's, you know, moderately decent sized pictures, so you can see what's going on. And I'm excited to try it out.
I do think that all of the visuals actually do a really good job of drawing your eye to each thing and in a different way, right? Like they don't They don't bleed together very much. They stand out from each other, but at the same time, they do look very cohesive. I think this is honestly one of the best AIs that or UIs that CCP has come up with, certainly in a long time. I just realized that, like, even opening up the agency, all of the agent missions, all of the encounters besides Abyssal Dead Space are all like red boxed out, and it says unavailable in wormholes. So they are in your face about the fact that this stuff doesn't help you out once you get into the scary, spooky space.
And I'm good with that. I'm totally good with that.
I really like the concept of wormholes. And one of my characters who part-time lives in a wormhole, I've been doing a thing where I just get in like a magnate and I just go through Anarchist, right? And I look for garbage. I look for if anybody left behind a ship or if anybody left behind a mobile tractor unit or like destroy little structures, bubbles and tractor units, look for lost drones, look for lost ships. It's kind of like wormhole garbage collecting, and it's fun
and profitable too.
Potentially profitable, and it feels like exploration.
When I was playing with the alphas, what I did with my explorer character was I just wandered around through HiSec, and I made my first chunk of money, enough that I was safe enough to get like two or three exploration ships by just grabbing drones and stuff that was left on various gates in different areas, selling them.
I remember grinding mission after mission after mission after mission just to build up enough ISK to be able to buy my next mission ship so that I can make more ISK and do it again over and over again.
Yeah. I'm glad that has changed. Like that's not, that progression, I guess, still technically exists, but there's enough other shortcuts.
There are a ton of opportunities to step up much faster than you did back in my day.
But you have to know, and that's the key. I think that's what's most important out of all of this, is that, yeah, you can jump into it. Like, you could probably be doing the Abyss within a month, especially if you use, like, a buddy code first or something like that, and be making pretty good money. But you have to know what you're doing, right? It's not like a brand new person's going to be jumping into these things. So unlike level 4 missions where you kind of have this almost artificial grind barrier, a lot of these new things basically just says, hey, when you're ready, you can do it. But guess what? You're not ready yet.
I get so impressed by some of the newer players when I see them, like legitimate new players, not like alts, who are like doing stuff in their first couple months when I was like mining back when a tormentor was a mining ship and I was just in a tormentor like shooting at a rock trying to figure out how to jump to the next system, right? Like I've had people who are like, it's their first week in the game and I get them into my PvP fleets and in a couple jumps and they start keeping up, right? And I'm just so impressed by newbies.
So the question was asked, how much do you have to explain to these people? I would say that, generally speaking, I wouldn't say that like you have to explain less necessarily. It's that they get it faster, if that makes sense. Like, they have the context that they need to understand what you're saying to them, as opposed to them just knowing everything by themselves.
I don't know about that. Oh, by the way, Ash, it seems like your mic is dead on the stream, but we can hear you fine on Discord. So, in my answer to Liz for that question is, how many things do you still have to point out to new people? You're always pointing stuff out to new people. Every time you have a new person, you're starting back at square one. So the process of explaining things to the newer people is always an ongoing process. The difference is that nowadays, the start point that they have to launch off from is much, much easier than the start point was even 5 or 8 years ago. So many of the processes of EVE have been streamlined, made easier or made smoother or made more user-friendly over what happened 8-10 years ago. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I don't really, I hate being that guy that says you're dumbing down EVE, but you know, sometimes making things easier for the sake of making things easier, I don't necessarily agree with, but hey, I could be in the minority on that.
So there's this great video by Extra Credits called Depth Versus Complexity, which I posted just I tweeted about it just prior to the expansion. But basically what it boils down to is that depth is kind of the possibility space of the game, and complexity is the amount of information that a player has to hold in its head, in their head at any given time, in order to make good decisions and interact with the game. And so I believe that, you know, CCP has really done a lot of work to try to reduce the complexity without necessarily reducing the depth. And I at least believe that that's a commendable effort, because the bottom line is that we need players, and we need players that enjoy it, and we need players that are having fun, and we need players that are capable of doing what they need to do, and more importantly, feel that they're capable of doing what they need to do. Right. And I just think that so much of what's happened over the last couple of years has done a much better job of letting that happen.
And certainly it's a move to remove some of the like the false choices, like, for instance, failing to update your clone or stuff like that, where it's like,
right, okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Do,
but it's like, at what point?
I'm glad that I don't have to buy a new clone every time I die now.
Oh, that was killing me.
Yeah, that's one I actually agreed with a lot.
Well, here's the dead giveaway, or at least it's the dead giveaway for me. Karker has had her little things, and her little things projects have been always rabidly popular. You know, so whenever,
I love Karker, yeah,
and so when all these little changes, all these little quality of life changes get implemented, we all go, yay! But because they are always so popular, it's, you can always tell there is room for doing some of this. There's room for making things. Okay, now Ash, I remember. Okay, deep versus complex. You can always make things deeper, but dialing back on the complexity isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right. And a lot of little things do that as well, right? So like a good example would be the fact that you can see your EWAR over your HUD and hover over it to see who's doing it and control clicking on it. That was a change that reduced complexity without reducing depth. You know, the fact that you can hover over your missiles and see how far they'll go, and you don't have to do the math yourself, that's reduction of complexity without reducing depth. And before anybody says, oh, well, doing the math was the fun part, not when you're under different EWAR, things are happening, you know, there's other effects happening. You know, it's not enough to just have your ship's capabilities memorized. That's one thing. But having your ship being able to communicate to you live what its current capabilities are significantly reduces complexity. This is why I believe that the angular velocity should be actually listed with the locked on target. So as that way you can better understand why the turrets are or are not hitting, but I digress.
That'd be pretty great, to be honest, not just distance. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Especially since that's such an important thing and it's not even on the overview by default. So it's like,
that's one of the hardest things I find to teach people about the angular velocity. And there are some people that just have such a hard time getting it. Because we had a thing set up where somebody would be like in a cruiser, and then I'd hand out little cheap frigates that I'm like, okay, turn your AB on and get in there without dying, right?
That reminds me, yeah. Pointer tool. What do you guys think about the pointer tool?
I think most people are going to use it to aggressively spam the undock button at people, but I think it's actually really useful.
So you know what I do?
Yeah.
If I'm on a stream and anyone asks me, where is anything in the UI, I now just teach them how to get to the pointer window. And I say, and once they get there, I say, this is a list of all of the things in the game. Just click on it and it'll tell you where it is. It's like, teach a man to fish, man.
Yeah, but like the pointer, the linking the UI has been really helpful. Just because I have a lot of newbies in like my public fleet, and then I'll be like, okay, you have to turn off your safety. And they're like, the what? Right. And it's like, oh, you click this and then it'll show you. Turn that thread.
Yeah, it's awesome. The only confusion that I have is, so if items are in the Neocom, everything that's in the Neocom just points directly to the Neocom, like the little E, and it'll say the folders, but the people I saw on stream did not look at that. It was very confusing to them. They would click on the E, and then as soon as you click on the E, the pointer disappears, and so then they don't know what to do from that point on. There are little things that would be nice to improve it, but overall, I think it is a huge feature. It's funny that these little tiny things end up probably being like the biggest game changers in the long run.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. Anything else worth talking about in the invasions besides the invasions?
And that's an awfully broad question.
I'm trying to think of it, if there's any other big features that's worth talking about. Oh, the new war deck system. Has anybody checked that out at all? I know that a lot of people have gotten upset at the fact that there's a little tag at the top left corner that says war deck.
I hate that. And even for faction warfare. Why? Because it's new and it angers me.
That's hilarious. So, I mean, I guess I get that on the one hand. On the other hand, there's like that Reddit post.
I keep looking at it and thinking it's a combat timer. And I'm like, oh God, I can't jump.
That is a good point. It would be nice if it was in like a different area or looked different enough that when you saw it out of the corner of your eyes, you didn't think it was some sort of timer. That's actually a really good point. I was making the joke earlier. It's like, oh, anybody who thinks that the Wardeck thing is bad, then obviously they don't have anything in their redemption queue, because now in the very bottom left, it shows you how many things are in your redemption queue. And it just constantly has that sitting there with a big old red number.
Well, that went away. I didn't redeem the stuff, but it went away.
Oh, okay.
I just like looked at it.
Either way, the thing though is that like there was a Reddit post that was saying, oh yeah, all these things should be optional. Every change should be optional. You should be able to, you know, turn everything you want off on the UI. The only thing I'm going to say to that is you are feature creeping. The feature right there. Like if you're saying that every single feature has to have some sort of capability of also removing it, then you're adding an extra layer of demand, because that's almost a whole nother feature in and of itself, right? When it comes to these kinds of things. So if there's a lot of features that only barely get out the door, so if you also made it so that there's a customization to it, that may prevent features from actually being made at all. And I don't know if people fully appreciate that. I think that there might be some mid-range thing. Like, for instance, it could be possible that the war deck one would be a good one to hide away. Like you could right-click it, don't show again. But the idea of like everything being customizable or CCP not making any changes ever to your precious UI, I think people need to just get over that idea.
The one thing that I will say that I thought was kind of interesting was we have literally, and when I say we, I mean ABA, has literally been war decked for like the last month straight by Pirate and some of their affiliates. I logged in and we are war deck free for literally the first time in a month. And part of me wonders if it isn't because now they have to have some skin in the game.
Yeah. Well, the idea of the war room, is pretty cool. Although, again, I saw a post that was basically like, yeah, you know, now we can fight back. Oh, I can fight back if I'm willing to stay up at 4 o'clock in the morning, right? So now we have, it's like time zone tanking has finally made it to HiSec. And so now they're complaining about it too. On the other hand, in this case, I actually find it very interesting because basically that could lead to complacency. Like these organizations might think that that's going to protect them. And one of these days it's not. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And the issue with time zone tanking is you have to deal with it too. So if somebody is capable of showing up, then you're going to have like what NCDOT had this morning, where they had to wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to defend their timer. Otherwise, they would lose the entire war. So, you know, time zone tanking goes both ways, guys.
My only curiosity, and it's something that I would like to see brought back up to CCP, is if you are putting up a structure as a war room for a HiSec war deck, then maybe they need to relook at the times, that time zone tanking. Maybe they need to relook at it and reevaluate it in the case of war decks.
Oh, like a war deck or like a structure that's being used as a war deck
no longer gets to be set at some insane bizarre time, because you know we
can do that. People live everywhere in the world, so an insane
that's true dark, that's yeah. true. But maybe you should make the structures okay. If you war deck me, suddenly my structures don't have timers and neither do yours.
I think that there'd be a middle ground there where you basically say, okay, well, if you have any active war decks in which you are the aggressor, then your structures need to have like a low sec timer as opposed to a high sec timer. Because remember, the more dangerous the space, the more hours per week you have to be vulnerable. So it could be a possibility where if you could just increase the number of hours that they have to be vulnerable to make it so that you can't keep all of your hours in these ridiculous time zones. It has to at least somewhat bleed into more reasonable times. But who knows? It is really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, right? I want to see how much this affects war decks, whether or not any new occupations come out of this. Because now that there's a target, now you can hire mercenaries, right, to go after that target for you. And I also wonder, I keep going back to this, I wonder what's going to happen with Solitude. Because something like Solitude becomes extremely valuable.
That's
if you
right.
can secure it and like use it as your war room like place, that has a lot of power.
Yeah, any high-sec island, Solitude, or like Mishi, or anything like that.
There's actually a really nice high-sec island right next to Fliat, now that I think about it. Let's do this. All right.
I know if worse comes to worse and I have to go to Solitude to shoot at a war target's war structure, I'll be calling Push X and having them ship me some ships out there.
I mean, at that point, you just scan down some wormholes and find a route.
Yeah, but wormholes are scary.
But see, this is what I like, right? There are these solutions, but you have to pick up these slightly different things that you don't normally have to do.
Annoys me. Somebody could declare war on us, but it doesn't matter because I'm always in low sec. But let's say we have people who do stuff in high sec, and then they could put it in the Federation or the Republic where the faction warfare police attack us because we're in faction war.
That would be sort of nasty.
There's a lot of potential, that's for sure. Although CCP would have to directly acknowledge faction warfare and do something about it in order for that to happen. So I don't know about all that.
Well, no, it's not even... They could do it now, because if I go into like the Minmatar Republic or the Galente Federation, the police attack me. So if
Correct.
We were in a war, they could put their structure in Pator.
It would be... One of the things that I would like to see, just in general, is more reward for having positive interactions as opposed to only penalties for having negative interactions. Like, it'd be nice if you as a corporation have a high enough standings with the local wildlife that they will help you in some way, not just I've now gotten so low that they're attacking me. All right, we should probably be moving on though to, well, we got Makoto here, so we should talk about invasion. It was either invasion or CSM, so I'm just going to say that the CSM the lead up to election. So we have the people who are running for the CSM now. There's a bunch of people doing interviews. We will talk probably more about the CSM, our feelings about it, and our candidates in the next episode. We should probably make the next episode mostly focused on the CSM. The only thing I'll say about it now is vote. Do not let anyone convince you that it's not worth it. Don't let anyone convince you that the CSM is just a sham or whatever. It's not. And more importantly, the more people that vote, the less that will be true. CCP and others use not only who wins, but the number of people that voted as a metric for all kinds of things. So regardless of how you feel and regardless of who you want, vote and participate in this very, I'm not going to say unique, but rare thing within the gaming world, which ends up being a thing like the CSM. But we'll talk about that more next week. And I'm going to hand it over to Makoto to talk a little bit about invasions.
Oh, hand it over, eh? Okay, well, I'm going to need all of you likely as foils to make sure that I don't just sort of wander off on this subject, because this is a very Yeah, I know, right? It's a very deep rabbit hole that we've got here. The natural question, of course, is, well, where are we and what's coming next? Where are we? Well, okay, so we've got the thing that we've sort of suspected has been coming for a while. You know, we've sort of known that the Triglavians were starting to prepare to move. They more or less declared war on the Sansha and the Drifters, and maybe most of the rogue drones, and then declared that they intended to engage in cladistic proving against Capsuleers, which is sort of a test of ideals in the form of ritual combat, where you're either mortified or glorified. And, you know, that thing that we saw in the Abyss, the World Ark ship Hordage, well, we haven't seen it yet, but clearly that's the next thing to come. And what we do know at this point is that, in the first place, the invasion systems, the Abyss and abyssal radiation and tropic radiation is leaking in, hence, you know, the mists, the redness, the conduits that will be forming. But also then, we've started to get some interesting things first shown in the trailer and also then you know, hinted as possibly being relevant in other ways. The World Ark, in that Singularity Triune, evidently is for a conduit generator that's attached to the ship. So it emerges from the abyssal depths, and then it's a gate, and more Triglavians keep pouring through. And then, of course, there's the questions like, okay, well, we've got this one World Ark, and right now it's going to be a large collidable structure. So in theory, destroyable. God only knows if we have the firepower to actually do it. And an interesting random thing that was also mentioned recently in a news article was, I think, a Thucker city ship. So it might be that this might be the first example of a class of ships that CCP is going to expand generally, or at the very least, it might be a ship that we eventually as players get that allow us to like basically have configurable and mobile gate networks in some way. I mean, this is totally tinfoiling, but anyway.
Right. Okay. So, but the invasion started on Tuesday, but
yes,
what we have now is not the final invasion. So we only have suspicions as to what this thing is going to look like in its entirety, right?
Yeah, so we've basically only seen stage one of two or three. And so, you know, this like Thunderdoming Triglavian fleets and seeing if you can solo them in Marauders and, you know, trying out like Caracals and Ospreys and all the rest of that. I mean, basically, at this point, we're fighting what Concord and what the Triglavians consider to be scouts. Certainly, there's a lot of pew. I think we're seeing the randomness and the variety that the new encounter generation system is capable of providing in addition to the AIs and the more configurable NPCs. And it also already looks like CCP is able to adjust the difficulty on the fly. Even from like day one to two and three, the composition of the hostile fleets has been changing and ramping up a little bit. So CCP might even in live be tuning it to make sure that it's adequately challenging, that we're a little bit pressed here.
Right. And so the thing that has impressed me the most about this is just how little we know. And, you know, I like to say that we don't know anything for sure, but there's a lot of people that have information from Hobelix. You've said stuff about how many people are going to be allowed in each site. But at the same time, all of this is just stand-in information. And they've clearly shown the ability to change the data like on a day-to-day basis. So do you feel that we are totally entering into the unknown? How do you feel that CCP is doing when it comes to this kind of feature? Because this is obviously where they want to go from here.
So CCP has certainly tightened up their information control to a significant degree. To a certain degree, there's only so far they can go with it because, you know, inevitably things do have to come to test servers. But the fact that, for instance, this feature was built on existing systems and they did a lot of internal testing and then shifted it live, considering that it's been, I would consider fairly successful. I mean, obviously there are some teething problems, but that's something that would have come about even with singularity testing because even with singularity testing, they couldn't replicate the sheer scale of the fighting that's been happening on Tranquility. I mean, you know, it's like Singularity is like, okay, you can do a mass test maybe for an hour or two, but you can't, you know, have the equivalent of like 24 or 48 hours of hundreds of people in dozens of fleets, you know, constantly hammering on NPCs and fleets being generated and flying around and shooting each other and so on and so forth. So in that regard, you know, they've managed to use existing systems in a pretty remarkable way. And we haven't necessarily been able to, you know, to see what's coming in the fullest extent. But the flip side is CCP's design priorities and their methods are to some degree known. So, you know, we're certainly looking in the crystal ball to some degree to try to figure out what's going to come. On the other hand, you know, there are only so many options in the playbook.
Right. We got a question from the chat, which is from Humanus, who asks, do we know why it's called a world arc? Is that meaningful in any way?
So the name itself, world arc, is... Yes and no. World arc, it's sort of like a world ship, excepting, of course, obviously the term arc has biblical connotations, and that's certainly intended. Notably in the Directive Hordage video that was sent out via semiosis message, it's implied that the Hordage is a reclassification or an update of a prior existing specification, the Kitiezh, which specifically references a Russian town or village that's sort of like the Russian equivalent of Atlantis, excepting that it's not really Atlantis in the sense that, you know, oh, hey, it was, you know, this ancient place and just sort of swallowed up by the seas, but rather the story is that the Mongols were riding toward this town, and instead of resisting, the people prayed for salvation, and they were swallowed by the waters. The waters saved them from the Mongols. So you have these ships.
They're sent to the abyss.
Exactly. So then the question is like, okay, well, we know that they consider the ancient enemy as Daja, or the Drifters. Well, obviously, their ancient enemy, their mortal foe, who need to be extirpated or locally exterminated.
You keep saying that. Extirpated means completely destroyed, rooted out and completely destroyed.
Yeah, it depends on which reference you're going with. In I want to say it's probably a biological reference in the term of local extinction. So like, let's say you've got an island chain and you've got this species on like five different islands. You can extirpate it on like three of the five islands. It still exists on the other two. So it's not extinct, but is completely removed from three of the five environments.
I see.
That's sort of one of the reads. But of course, it might also be that they just do mean extinguish.
Well, I mean, given the fact that they like disappear into sand, I don't think the Triglavians are going to just be like, you know what? The Drifters aren't here anymore, so we're happy.
Yeah, no, it's totally... and that's a notable thing, is that they definitely do think that certain ideologies are so hostile to their own that the only answer is to eliminate the holders of those ideologies, which is very much a post-human ideology is person, you know, meme makes mind type of thing. But anyway.
And, do we know, sorry, one more thing. Do we know if their attitudes about us have changed? Because it seemed like up until this point, they were on the fence about us, but now they seem rather mad.
So it's a mixed thing. Certainly, it seems like they think that anyone who is associated with the Sansha, even those who do not necessarily possess implants but may have been corrupted in other ways, just need to be purged. And it's entirely possible that this also means people who are like, hey, you're Sansha aligned and you're in our fleet, cool, whatevs. So, you know, that could be messy from like a roleplay perspective, but it could also be that, you know, it's like we're talking about a post-human society that's lived in isolation for who knows how many centuries or millennia. It's entirely possible that they just don't think about death in the same way. So cladistic proving, I mean, mortification, like, you know, it's like, if you're mortified, doesn't that mean you die?
Well, yeah. Well, they even say, capsuleers that are unfit will be expelled from the flow, which, you know, anybody who's been through the abyss, you can get expelled from the flow, as it were.
Yeah, it sort of means blown up.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, kind of. So, I
mean, and it's also worth noting that they bring it up right after saying clandestine, talking about clandestine proving, right? So they're saying, you know, two go in, one come out, kind of a deal. Glorification to the worthy and mortification, or sorry, glorification to the fit and mortification to the unfit, of the two people that go into the proving.
Yeah. And so, you know, cladistic proving in this sense, you know, like clade very much refers to, like, you know, well, we see it with the spheric villas and Perun, like there are clades, but we also see the term used in other areas. And it's just, you know, your affiliation, your worldview, it might have more philosophical associations. Honestly, that's a rabbit hole we could probably go down, but I'm not sure necessarily any of us have the philosophical grounding for it.
All right, so carry on. I'm sorry. I've interrupted you enough times.
No worries. So circling back to the Kitiege thing and the world arc. So basically, like, yeah, it's entirely possible these were previously unmilitarized evacuation vessels. And basically, like, the ships that brought them to the abyss and where they were evacuated from, whether this was like Deuterid, for instance, where there are dead storms around various planets, or whether this is wormhole space and they were the ones evacuating from wormhole space in the face of the return or the rise of the others. And that's a standing question. That's something that we could, like, talk for hours about from a lore perspective.
See, Humanus has another question. The size of the world arc is enormous. Is there any possibility that these are associated with in any way the ships that brought us here through the Eve Gate? I think I can answer that, which is that in the Eve, in the original Origins trailer, they show the ships coming out of the Eve Gate, and they're not that big. In fact, they're the same ships that you see in, like, if you go to archaeology sites, the ships that are broken down, those are the same models as what you see in the original trailer. But what do you have to say?
I wouldn't necessarily say that they're related to the vessels that brought the various groups of humans through the Eve Gate, but they could very easily be associated with the motherships that the Jove used to evacuate from the ruins of the Second Empire to the Third.
I was thinking too, because not only escaping, but even getting to the first to the location of the First Empire, they used basically world arcs.
Yeah, though, you know, it's likely that the specifications of the ships, you know, changed over time, that the technical capabilities of the various groups varied, etc., etc. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, this might just be representative of the type of class of ship. And it is worth noting that, for instance, early on in Eve, CCP's original plan with what became supercarriers, but were originally known as motherships, would basically be that they would be mobile stations, able to have, like, ships docked, but still jump, etc., which in its way is actually fairly similar to how the world arc is going to play out in some regards. And if you really want to get tinfoily, then you could probably bring it back to the extended vision of colonization in Eve and what it would mean to colonize new space. But as usual, that's a deep rabbit hole, and we don't necessarily know if that's the intended development direction.
Do we know if the Triglavians have knowledge of the Jove?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So they have made references at various points to the Chamber of Tyrants. They are surprised by the activity and behavior of the Drifters and believe that it's anomalous. They had been thinking that the Drifters were the Tyrants to some degree, but the behavior doesn't match, evidently. And at one point in one of the Semiosis intercepts, the Triglavians refer to a Jovian Triglavian satellite polity, which is to say, essentially, like an organization or government or a colony or colonial region that is jointly held, operated, populated something by the Jovians and the Triglavians. There is, of course, an asterisk here, big and flashy. We don't necessarily know if this means that the Triglavians aren't Jovian at all, or if they just consider themselves to be separate because of ideological reasons or due to their extended separation in the Abyss.
All right. Well, we have been going on for quite some time, so let's make sure that we hit on all of the points before we have to wrap it up. So,
yeah. Okay, so getting away from tinfoily lore stuff. So at this point, mechanically, what we see is, you know, foothold systems, perimeters, and adjacents, scouting fleets wandering the systems, the Zorias, who appear to be like solo bosses who then get reinforced by whatever ships and fleets are in the system when you attack them, but have really tasty loot. And yeah, just sort of an evolving, escalating threat. Where exactly it goes, we can definitely theorize, but what we do know is that at some point, probably stage two or something, there will be conduit sites, which will basically be places where you'll go with smaller fleets, and you'll basically attempt to catch Triglavians as they're coming into the system. There are strings that indicate that if the Triglavians manage to make it out of the site, if they manage to warp off, that you won't be getting an Iskra LP payout. So at some point, Concord's going to get off its butt and start giving us Iskin LP for fighting the Triglavians, but evidently not quite yet. And then I guess it's just sort of like, okay, well, what exactly specifically about the invasions do we want to talk about? I mean, we've been...
Well, I assume that that would be the Aegis Department of Concord, correct?
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. And getting into the backstory side of it, so... Previously, all of the precursor stuff was handled by Case Red Gamma, I believe it was, CRG,
yep.
By Oveg Drust, who is a captain with Sorrow, basically like Concord Spec Ops, super scary, blah, blah, blah. And he has, let's say, an antagonistic relationship with Capsuleers.
He's angry Concord guy, right?
Yeah, he's a jerk.
Yeah, super angry, and yeah. But anyway, so after lots of his gurring at Capsuleers, what's her face? The name's going to Vulcaneer with Aegis took over oversight of the Case Red Gamma group. And she appears to be more receptive to a cooperative relationship, even if it's probably still going to be mostly Concord's black box and occasionally they'll pay us to do stuff.
Now, what I found noteworthy about that was Aegis was actually formed to deal with Case Green Magic, which most people probably have not heard of, even the people that have heard about Case Green Red McGamma. Case Green Magic popped up very briefly last year and then disappeared, and seems to be pretty clearly in pointing towards Project Nova. I've been saying that the fact that they've brought that back by making these all under one umbrella and having her specifically say that she's still under command of Case Green Magic seems to imply that they're at least keeping that plot on life support, if not fully bringing it back to start like playing with it again. Do you agree with that?
Definitely. One thing we need to remember, though, is that all of these organizations still exist in the EVE universe. And while there are different styles and story approaches for any given property in the EVE universe, it's still the same universe. So once an organization exists in EVE and has some sort of backstory and tie-in, it's a lot easier just to bring it up, which is why, for instance, like, the Sakal Headhunters, you know, it's like, okay, it was a Dust 514 group, but, you know, it made perfect sense to bring them in for the slaver story.
I would argue that it's one thing to reuse Aegis, and it's another thing for the Aegis person to specifically say that they're still doing Case Green Magic.
That's fair. That is quite fair.
All right. Anything else anybody got for this? Do we know anything about where this is going? Or do we have any suspicion that we will be able to work with the Triglavians, or is that pretty much ruled out?
That is a giant question mark. It's entirely possible that we end up in a weird situation where the Triglavians want us to fight and kill them because it proves that we are fit and worthy. So it might be one of those things where, like, unlike everyone else, eventually running incursions will start giving you positive standing with the Triglavians. Who knows? But it definitely seems like, considering that CCP has hinted at giant world changing things, that the game is afoot. But what exactly that game is, I mean, we could throw some darts at the board, but I'm sure they'll get me laughed at in Reykjavik next year.
Well, I did think it's honestly answering. honestly, answering that question is going to be one that a lot of capsuleers are going to want to know the answer to is, you know, do we fight against them? Do we fight with them? You know, what are the consequences of one or the other or both?
So my response is, this is a group, a civilization that appears to resolve ideological differences through trial by combat at the interstellar level. So what happens when they eventually decide, okay, we've dealt with the Sancho, we've dealt with the Drifters. UMR people are religious in the wrong way. Or
hey.
Exactly. So, you know, what ends up happening, and I think it ends up being one of those things where eventually, even if we were to work with them, it would probably not end in a peaceable manner.
This is what you get for poking them with sticks, Makoto.
Yeah, the
like, Drifters first. Is this our fault? Is this our fault?
No, no.
Are they attacking because of the fact? This is what I don't get. So, like, in the Abyss, they were always like, oh, yeah, it's proving. We're doing this on purpose. We want to see if you're okay, if you guys are good about not about it. And now they're coming and they said that they're mad. So it's like, well, but you told us to, right? Like,
all right. So in my character's perspective, we got the filaments and then we did abyssals. And then they said, basically, come at us. So I think they were mad at that point already. So I think it is our fault.
I thought the whole thing about them showing up with like weakened ships was to play fair with us. Like they're playing with us.
Entirely possible. I mean, it is one of those things where it has been established that the places that we see in the Abyss are proving conduits, the proving zone, or I can't recall the exact phrase. So, I mean, honestly, I think, yes, they are angry with Sancha and Drifters and non-compliant rogue drones, and they're going to exterminate the vermin rogue drones. As to capsuleers and the empires at large, I think this is cladistic proving, to the point that the gates actually have liminal proving in triangle in their signs.
Do we know anything about how they are going to interact with player structures or other structures in general? There are some very interesting visual effects happening to any structure that they are interacting with. And when people show up, they seem to stop doing that interaction in order to deal with the people. So do we think that they're going to escalate in that way, in any way? So, I know there's a lot of people excited by that idea.
Oh, yeah. There are a few answers to that. The first thing is that CCP has teased NPCs bashing structures in a video like 3 or 4 months ago. So
The POS rats, the FOB rats bash structures.
Yeah, that's sort of by happenstance, it seems like. But they don't like finish the job. They just sort of poke them. But yeah. The video in question showed like 20 or 30 Republic Fleet Tempests bashing on a refinery. And so that was pretty decisive. And
wait, what video? Where? What?
So it was a gameplay video. There's like a brief, like 3-second part of it where it shows a bunch of diamond rats bashing on a structure. So near as I can tell, or near as we can tell, CCP Loki was teasing that this is a thing that they're working on. We're guessing.
Can you get us that video so that way we can put it in our show notes?
Yeah, I can totally find that for you. And awesome. Then I think, you know, Samiki was probably a sort of a live test, you know, the developers having fun and seeing if it works live. And it sort of did. It did. If you shot the rats with the structure, then they would come finish the job, or at least they would finish out that timer. But they didn't necessarily seem to know how to, like, continue through the armor bash and hull bash.
Right. I've seen them reinforce the shields, but they don't come back unless it's like by chance.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't hunt for vulnerable or for the timer to come up.
Yeah, though it's entirely possible that it might be one of those things where they don't do the job during the scouting phase, but maybe they get progressively more aggressive over the various later phases. We don't know yet.
The amount of I don't knows is...
I want to know what the background is in the abyssal, when the abyssal is in the regular space and the invasions, like, because it turns into like the red background, and I want like an explanation why is like the abyss leaking.
Well, I mean, they are opening massive numbers of conduits and pouring large quantities of ships through. But it's also entirely possible that, like, you know, we don't know what happens if we lose, or if we try to string things along, or if we don't, like, finish it up somehow. I mean, could it be that, like, oh, hey, you won, you're glorified, we are glorifying you by taking you all into the abyss? Or is it like, oh, hey, you are insufficiently fit, we're mortifying you, we're blowing up this star? We don't know.
That's what I want. I want to fight them back to the world arc and then jump through the world arc and deal with them there. That's what I want.
Who knows? That might be a possibility.
It might be. All right. Well, we are coming at the 2-hour mark, and Random said that he probably wasn't going to be able to make it too much longer than that. I think somebody already, like, dropped out after 1 hour. So
I'm still here. I didn't
have okay, cool. Well, then we should probably be wrapping it up soon. But obviously, we're going to need you guys to come back again and keep talking to us, because it's fascinating stuff.
There's a lot here.
Random or Opus or Min, do you have anything you want to pitch in there?
No, I think lore-wise, as far as the invasion goes, that's pretty solid and pretty deep. It's going to take me a couple of listens to try to absorb everything and try to get the full effect of it. We may have to, on a next episode sometime, talk about the more practical aspect of the invasion, such as what kind of ships we could use and what kind of expectations we have when we go into one of these sites.
Right. Yeah. I specifically avoided that just because of how much things are changing. Like, if we gave out advice, by the time you got this edited, it'd probably be different.
Yeah. Probably. Well, the case, yeah.
And that isn't even a slight on your editing. That's just the way it is.
And for that matter, actually, it seems like they've set it up so that, like, if you've got a solid comp that can, like, rep through things and do a decent bit of DPS and has enough mobility, like, it seems like you can be really flexible in what you bring. Like, the fleets that ARK has been organizing, you know, we've been using Guardians and Drekoviks at present, and, you know, we can Thunderdome through pretty much anything. But
the thing I like about it so far, like, obviously the sites aren't there anymore, but the thing I like about the freeform nature of it, after doing it for about 2 hours, I commented to my buddy, who's, you know, did faction warfare with me. I was like, you know what the only difference between this and a low sec Rome that's in a highly target rich environment, like some of the best faction warfare with plexes and stuff, the only difference is nobody's yelling out point. Like, everything else, every other beat. Now, it's not as hard, and obviously the player, they're not quite as unpredictable as players, but, you know, you're using D scan, you're hunting them down, you're prioritizing targets, you are
scamming them though.
We didn't. We're bad.
It's really great to, like, drop on zero of Azoria.
I was I was in a small, like, 8-person fleet. Well, I was 2 of the people, but Arcia with the Amar restriction, it was a shield fleet, and I had a shield Harbinger Navy, and it was, like, really good.
That sounds so weird and terrible, but also amazing.
No, because they had a bunch of Drakes, and I had a shield Harbinger Navy, so I was, like, doing all the damage. It was great.
Yeah, as long as you have, like, a 5-man fleet with some sort of logistics support and or at least a T2 cruiser above, you're going to be relatively successful.
Well, we got attacked in the central zone by a bunch of stuff. We were fine in the zone, 2 zones before it, but then we get to the central system and we were doing all right, but then we went to the star and then, like, 1,000 things jumped on us and we had to warp out and one of the Drakes died.
I guess my question is, if there's no more reward for the center pieces, why would you go to the harder site or the harder rooms?
Because you have to kill the triangles and save the Empire.
Fair. Wait, it was a Glente positioned site.
There were 3, and then there those went down, and then there's a 4th. So they were.
That is actually one last question that I do have about this, which is that the today in particular, there seems to be, they've had a lot more problems than normal at the beginning of the day. There was no sites, and then there's one, and then it went away. Do we know if this is intended? Do we suspect that this is playing out the way it's supposed to be, or is this them, like, dealing with the little hiccups before they go to phase 2?
So from a lore perspective, we can say, oh, hey, these are totally probing attacks. They're testing our responses and adjusting their responses and so on. In a very real sense, you know, as I was saying earlier, it's like when you've got hundreds of nerds bashing on a thing for like a dozen hours, you're going to throw out errors and see things that you wouldn't necessarily, even if you had like 200 guys on CC for an hour in a mass test. So just like the sheer duration of the fighting and the scale of it is greater than anything they could possibly simulate. So there are going to be hiccups. It was going to happen, you know, whatever happened.
Yeah, I gotta say, especially after the Drifter incursions, the fact that the servers are doing as well as they are is relatively impressive. I also wonder, have we noticed any changes in any way in between like the downs? Like, are they changing something and then bringing it back up with the new configuration?
The spawns seem to be changing and becoming more difficult, but that could just be perception. I mean, it's early days yet, and we haven't been taking all of the metrics right that we could.
All right. Well, the only other thing I want to throw out there is about the Abyss itself, which is that I've talked to some CCP members, and they've said that there wasn't supposed to be any changes to the Abyss behavior, but there clearly is. One of the interesting behaviors is that it looks like the Abyssal rats, a lot of them are not attacking right away anymore. Either they're waiting for you to get really, really close, or they're waiting for you to launch your drones or something like that. So long story short, if you notice these kinds of differences in behavior, from my understanding from CCP, this is not intended. So feel free to throw in your bug reports, and we'll see if we can get that fixed. All right. I think it's probably time for shoutouts, huh?
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a good idea.
All right. Well, Random, why don't you go first?
You would make me do that this time.
no, okay. Arcia, what do you got? You're the guest. We'll start with the guests.
Can somebody else go first? I don't know what I'm doing.
Makoto, what's your... You've been here before.
Yeah, shoutouts.
I've been here before, too, that's but fair. I don't know what I'm doing.
Hey.
All right. Well,
so first off, I'd like to give personal shout outs to Mike Ant Hunt and Deep Spar for taking out some of our fleets. It's been immensely helpful, allows me to focus on the logistics, and it's great having capable FCs leading the troops into battle. So in the first place, thank you so much for that, and hopefully this will be a long, fruitful relationship. And in the second place, for people who are wondering how to get involved and possibly want something a little bit more structured than a kitchen sink fleet, check out the Arataka Research Consortium. We've just opened up a public Discord, and we've been running usually like a fleet or two a day into the Abyss, currently usually EU time zone, but also we're going
the invasions
the invasions, pardon,
right?
And so come hang out with us, discuss the lore, and join us in fleet.
Are you guys still planning on doing Drifter Hive tours?
Yeah, we're definitely going to keep on with that. There are some questions as to the tempo, but at this point it's a pretty low tempo, so we should be able to sustain it and also do our invasion fighting.
Alrighty. Opus, you got anything to say, do, thank?
Just want to thank all my writers and editors at Eve Onion. They do a great job making some great content on the site. appreciate all the things they do.
I'm pretty sure we just caught Opus just sitting here frantically taking notes. Like, how do I turn all these things into jokes?
Pretty much. And there's just... Wow.
It was some deep lore that we got discussed tonight. So it's going to take me a couple of listens to kind of digest all of this.
If you're a listener right now at any time and you hear somebody say that there isn't lore in Eve anymore, or it doesn't happen actively in the game or whatever, just send them this video or this, this recording in whatever format it ends up being in. And make them listen to it, because it's completely not true. And the problem is that people just echo these truisms or these ideas as if they're truisms, and then nobody ever argues back about it. And so people just believe that they're true. And so, if nobody's engaging with it, then why would CCP invest in it? So if you like the lore, which as everybody hopefully that's made it this far does, or at least thinks it's interesting, you know, don't forget to remind people about it and send this to them.
And hey, always send them the latest discourse.
Heck yeah, you guys do awesome work with that. I know I say that like every single time I see you, but please, extra special thanks to all of the people that get involved with making the discourse happen.
It's a lot of work, but it's really rewarding, and it's an awesome product. Just, we love that people enjoy it so much.
It's what we needed so badly. All right, enough gushing about that. Min, do you have anything?
Yeah, shout out to our two guests for joining us this evening, providing us with all this information. It's been really cool to hear about all the backstory that's been going on since most other podcasts are just talking about the patch notes directly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's circle back out around. Arissa, you got something ready yet?
All right. Figured it out. Thank you to Praetorian Prealis Executivatoris, Kimi Harar, my two favorite Amar RP alliances, my public fleet, the Dam Farsad Honor Guard, and all the other public fleet friends, anybody who RPs with me, whether gurring at me or being my friend, and of course, I read for letting me fly against triangles with them because I'm not allowed to fly with Makoto.
Wait, not even Ark?
Well, that's I can awesome. Fly with you, like, because we were in New Eden together, but I can't fly with the Reds you fly with. So I probably can't fly with you most of the time.
It's actually sort of great, though, that we had Electus Matari with us fighting in a race against the Triangles. Yeah,
because wasn't Reggie the Logi FC and Deebs was the FC?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, if you're interested in any of this stuff, if you're interested in particular with just the Amar at all, you would do well to at least look into Pi. They are one of the oldest. You're the oldest alliance, right?
We are the Pi Inc. is the oldest active corporation. The oldest alliance is Ashra Khan, which is a Min Matar faction warfare alliance that also has RP history.
Right.
But Pi in fact, Inc. actually, is they the oldest have a skin. Active corporation.
And are you guys mad?
The bloody hand skin you're talking about? Or?
Yeah.
That's a separate thing, but I mean, it's enough. Good for that. Yeah. Right.
Well, then somebody told me that at some point. That's how little I know about things. All right. All those people that say that I'm the lore nerd, these people are the only reason why I even can pretend to be a lore nerd. So thank you guys for coming. Let's see. Random, did you get anybody yet?
No, but what I would like to do is circle back around to something we had talked about at the very beginning. And I would like to give my shout out to all of those people who are bringing back little bits and pieces of the tournament action to make up for the fact that CCP is not going to do Alliance tournament this year. I, as one, very much appreciate all the effort that the tournament rounds, even the little ones, are being used back in the game. So thank you.
Yeah, it takes everybody, and it's awesome stuff. And the Stream Fleet tournament ended up being pretty good. And, you know, we might not have all the tools that we want, but we never had the Thunderdome and stuff like that back in the day, and we were still able to get stuff done. So I for one, am very happy for all of the content creators that are making things like the Alliance or like the tournaments happen.
Indeed.
So for my shout outs, first of all, I want to shout out to CCP Dopamine and all of the folks over at Stream Fleet that have put together this 48 hours of streaming. I think it was not only was it lots of fun, and a good way of kind of showcasing a whole bunch of streamers that have been putting a lot of work into basically selling this game. But I think it was a really good way of rolling out the expansion, given the fact that there's so many unknowns, that it's good to be able to, you know, have people out there doing them in a visual way. So the entire thing was really cool. They gave us all free skins to give away. The whole community has been super positive. I'm really glad that this whole thing happened. Now, Liz is pointing out that there's Twitter, like Tweet Fleet, if you want to get involved in EVE on a deeper level. And these super lore nerds are just a little bit too much for you.
I linked the RP lore Discord.
Nice. Yes. Wait, is that different than Makoto's?
Yep.
Well, Makoto has the one for Ark and the their operations. Makoto and I are both mods on this one that I linked. It's specifically for RP and lore of all the Eve factions and that.
Okay, rock on. Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, there's more and more organizations about the communities, but what I'm saying is that if you want to get involved in the deeper level, the meta, whatever you want to call it, check out Tweetfleet on Twitter. I know that in the recent years, Twitter has gotten its own weird name because of various political entities that have decided to use it for their own advantage, but we got it first. So Tweetfleet is amazing. Make yourself a Twitter account for your character, get involved, and start having fun.
Hey, Makoto and Arcia, if you could make sure that I get a hold of the links that you're talking about, if you have any links, and then I'll make sure that when I post it up, I'll put them in the show notes as well.
All right.
And I guess my final shout out, I can't even remember everybody's names that have been part of it, but, you know, Midnight Space Monkey. Oh, God, I'm so bad with names. Humanis. All of the people that have been not only in the stream, but just donating stupid amounts of really crazy prizes to give away. It's been almost nerve-wracking to like be handed a 3 billion-esque skin and then be like, hey, give this to someone else. And it's like, all right, well, whatever. But it's been great. It's been super great. Thank you all for helping make it all possible. And on that note, on behalf of Arissa Elkin, Makoto Priano, Min, Opus Magnum, Random McNally, and myself, Ashtarothy, thank you all for listening to High Drag Podcast episode. I never even figured out what number it
98.
Was. 98. Almost there. We should do something for 100, but we'll get there. Somebody tweet us with some ideas for what to do for our 100th episode. Yeah. Until then, we'll see you in space.
Have a good night, everyone.
Oh, the whiskey is floating, won't stay in me glass. I'm weightless and spinning and drunk off me ass. Oh, the whiskey is floating in a spear or me head. If we don't clear this wormhole, we'll surely be dead. So reach for the whiskey, boys, reach for the stars. They won't stop us drinking on Venus or Mars. So reach for the whiskey, boys, reach for the sky. For the vacuum of space sucks the bottles off. The bomb.